Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 410. I'm David Elliott, and call me old-fashioned, but I still use a beeper. Cell phones are so overrated. Today, Fantastic Four, 410 from March 1996. The Ties That Bind by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. The cover of this issue says, there is an explosive love triangle, and there's a picture of Liger the Skrull with Johnny on one side and Ben on the other. Of course, Liger loves Johnny, but he doesn't love her. He kind of hates her. And Ben has the hots for Liger. I'm sure Ben likes the fact that she has shape-shifting powers and can turn herself into something else while in the bedroom, you know, something less female. So the story begins at Fantastic Freedom Center, or whatever it's called, FF Headquarters, with Sue looking on as her husband Reed and her son Franklin, still an adult from the future, are wearing these encephalo helmets, unusual for a previously shown invention to make a reappearance like this. So Franklin is using the helmets to probe Reed's mind, trying to find out if Hyperstorm planted any subconscious triggers in Reed's mind while he was his prisoner. They work at it for an hour, and Franklin can't find any trace of Hyperstorm's meddling with Reed's brain. But then again, why do they trust adult Franklin to make that determination? Maybe he was sent back in time by Hyperstorm to falsely assure Reed that his brain wasn't tampered with by Hyperstorm. Huh? How come nobody thinks of this? Ben and Johnny are happy, and they start goofing around. Namor's still hanging around. I guess he's hoping this turns out to be a fake Reed or a clone or something. Anyway, he does not look happy, as usual. He's wearing a black turtleneck sweater, so he looks... well, he looks like a dork. He looks less like the ruler of Atlantis and more like a band teacher at an all-girl prep school. So the horseplay with Johnny and Ben continues. Ben takes it in the ass from Johnny with a blast of flame. Ben tries to spray all over Johnny with a fire extinguisher, but Reed turns into a wall and stops the foam. Reed tells them both to calm down. They need to prepare for their next encounter with Hyperstorm. Over with adult Franklin, Sue, and Namor, they're worried that Reed might still be traumatized by his ordeal with Hyperstorm. What Franklin really needs to worry about is comic book readers of the mid-90s being traumatized by the ordeal of reading that shitty Fantastic Force comic of his. He suggests they give Doc Samson a call. Doc Samson? He's the green-haired psychiatrist from over in Hulk's magazine. Like, how did he get the idea to call Doc Samson? Reed excuses himself to go see how Christoph and Scott are doing on working on the time platform. He left a 12-year-old kid, an Ant-Man, in charge of fixing the time platform? Something really must be wrong with Reed. Johnny excuses himself to go on a date with Laura Green. And Ben is glad that he's not going on a date with Liger the Skrull. Whoa! What he doesn't know is, and what Johnny doesn't know, is that Laura Green is Liger the Skrull, in disguise! There's a note saying to check out the pages of Fantastic Four Unplugged number 4 to see that date. Really? I never even heard of that particular comic book. Fantastic Four Unplugged? Is that a book where the Fantastic Four sit around playing songs on acoustic guitars? That's a terrible name for a comic book. A little Google search reveals the book only lasted 6 issues. Unplugged. Like, all comics are unplugged. It makes no sense. So Reed heads into the lab where Christoph and Scott are working on the time platform, while Nathaniel looks on. They're trying to send this capsule into the future, but every time they activate the machine, they fail. The metal capsule stays right there in 1996. Nathaniel chimes in and says that it must be the work of Hyperstorm using his power to bar them from traveling in time. So this prompts Reed to ask his dad what he knows about Hyperstorm. Sue has been trying this for a couple of years now, but Nathan never tells her anything. This time, Nathan says he doesn't know any more about Hyperstorm. Reed is about to wrap his body around his dad, because he's kind of pissed off, when adult Franklin steps in and tells them both to cut it out. It's not like Reed is really going to beat the shit out of his father to get some information. Scott's daughter, Cassie, comes into the room and reminds her dad that Donald Hallberg is supposed to visit. And who is Donald Hallberg, you ask? Who do you think he is? He's a friend of Cassie's from school. Christoph butts in and says that he would like to meet Cassie's boyfriend. She says that he's only a regular friend, and Christoph is like, oh, really? Christoph still wants to get it on with Cassie, and Scott is relieved that his daughter finds Christoph creepy now that she's seen him wearing his Doctor Doom armor, which makes him look as tall as an adult, and you know, like Dr. Doom, which is a big turnoff for most women, especially 11-year-old girls. Reed is walking down the hall when he sees a flash of light coming from a nearby room. Thinking they're under attack, Reed runs in and finds the thing standing in front of that machine they found in the temple in Brazil. Ben's using it to turn himself back into a human. Reed's like, "Who invented that? How did you get that?" Reed says, "He'll fill him in later." Oh, poor Reed. He's been trying for over 30 years to cure Ben, and then they go ahead, when he's gone, and find a machine invented hundreds of years ago by aliens that does the job. Back with Christoph, he tosses his Dr. Doom mask across the room, realizing that, hey, he's a freak! And Cassie is terrified of him, walking around with that armor on, acting like an adult. She's only 11 years old, and she doesn't want to get her hymen busted by some Dr. Doom-looking weirdo. Christoph realizes he was only a tool used by Dr. Doom in case of his death, and with Dr. Doom having returned from death a couple of times, he doesn't really have a purpose, so he rips off his Dr. Doom armor. Over in the living room, Ben runs in to see Elijah, who's seeing Ben for the first time as his normal human self without that big scar on his face. She says he looks handsome. He's about to suggest she makes herself handsome too, and they spend the afternoon together in his bedroom, but she's got other plans, and she grows herself some wings and she flies away. After she's gone, Ben gets a big headache. Is it guilt for trying to put the moves on Johnny's ex-wife? He shouldn't feel bad about that since Johnny once put the moves on what he thought was Ben's ex-girlfriend. Or is it a side effect from the rock monster machine from Brazil? I think we can all figure out which one it is. Down in the lobby, Cassie greets her friend, a boy her age, Donald. Cassie starts bragging about how her dad works for the Fantastic Four and asks, "Isn't this place cool?" "Yes, the FF's waiting room. It's so cool. They have People magazine and Time magazine." At least Reed doesn't stock the waiting room with science journals and other magazines that would be of interest only to him. I hate when doctors do that. You go into the doctor's office and all they have are golf magazines. Oh, bastards. So Christoph, looking like a 12-year-old again, enters the room, hoping to meet Donald. They shake hands, and considering that Donald is a homely little bastard with a backwards baseball cap, maybe the dapper-looking Christoph is the man for Cassie after all. She tells Donald that Christoph is a friend of Dr. Doom's. And Don replies, isn't Doom a bad guy? In another room, Sue is working out with one of Dr. Doom's former friends, the Submariner, in their danger room. This place looks exactly like the X-Men's danger room. If Professor X knew that they had this, he would file a lawsuit. So Namor and Sue are working out, and Namor, back in his little green swim trunks, is tossing these metal objects at Sue, which she blocks with a force field, all while they discuss Reed, and whether or not Reed has been screwed up by recent events. Namor says, "Your husband is no longer the man he once was." Yeah, but at least he doesn't have a ponytail. Namor says the FF need a strong leader. Reed has lost his edge. They need someone who is decisive and self-confident and powerful. "Someone like me," he says as he tries to move in on to try to kiss Sue. Boy, is his timing terrible or what? He should have tried this move a lot sooner, like when Reed was dead. She uses a force field to push him away, saying, "Thanks for the offer, Namor, but the job's already taken." And good thing they didn't kiss, since Reed is standing up there in the control room, watching from the shadows. This does leave Reed wondering what happened with Sue and Namor while he was gone. And maybe she would be happier with the Submariner. It's possible that she no longer loves the man who she once called Mr. Fantastic, he says. Actually, in 410 issues, I don't think she's ever called him Mr. Fantastic. Only he calls himself that. Everyone else calls him Reed or Professor Richards. As he walks down the hall, we see Ben walk behind Reed, stumbling around like he's drunk or something, or sneaking around, probably drunk. Elsewhere, Elijah shows up for her date with Johnny Storm, lands, and turns into Laura Green. Johnny thanks her for giving him her beeper number so he could arrange this little rendezvous. A beeper? That sounds like a dumb idea. Now what if he calls Laura while Elijah is nearby and he hears the beeper go off? That could be a problem. He says that he could have picked her up at her place, but what he doesn't know is that her place is his place too. Crazy. She's like a character from an old 80s sitcom with this crazy dating scheme of hers. Back at FF headquarters, Kristoff is showing Cassie and Donald around. They pass this one door, which they can't go inside because it's restricted. Cassie asks why Kristoff can't go in since he's a member of the team. He says he's really more of a guest, with some restrictions thanks to his association with their greatest enemy and all. Donald screams out, "I don't want to be accused of breaking any rules. If that room's off limits, I'm getting out of here." And he runs away. Which is odd because Kristoff just said he couldn't go in there. They didn't go in. He didn't even suggest they go in. So why did the kid run away? Back outside, a man in a trench coat and a hat is lumbering down the street, bumping into people, being kind of rude. Kind of like a typical New Yorker. One guy looks at his face and calls him a monster, a freak, and yells out, "Somebody stop him!" But the mysterious guy in the trench coat heads forward, thinking that he must reach for Freedom's Plaza. So in a nearby park, Cassie and Donald are playing soccer, while Kristoff just stands there watching. He thinks to himself that he never learned how to play soccer, which is an odd thing for him to think, because as a European kid, shouldn't he be thinking to himself that he never learned how to play football? He remembers how he came from a tribe of gypsies in northern Latveria. His father was an injured traveler, nursed to health by his mother, and he knocked her up and fled the scene before Kristoff was born. Later, after his mom found a job in the capital city, they ran into Dr. Doom one day. Kristoff literally ran into Dr. Doom, but Kristoff spared the kid's life and took a liking to him and his mother. But later, Kristoff's mom was killed by robots, reprogrammed by Zorba to attack Dr. Doom. So Doom kind of took in Kristoff as his adopted son, and after Doom was seemingly killed, actually he was killed, but his mind was transferred over into another body, so after Doom was killed, the Doombots took Kristoff, strapped him up to a machine, and reprogrammed his brain with Dr. Doom's thoughts and memories. So for a long time, Kristoff thought he was Dr. Doom. Back in the park, Donald trips and falls down. When he gets up, the back of his shirt comes up a little, and Cassie sees something on Don's back. Scars and bruises. Uh-oh, this is starting to turn into a very special episode of the Fantastic Forecast. Donald screams out that he doesn't want to talk about it, ever, again, and he runs away. He seems to do that a lot. Back at the FF building, the lumbering mysterious man arrives, and upstairs, Reed is working in his lab. He still hasn't shaved off that beard yet, and Sue says that it seems he missed his lab more than he missed her, which is probably true. Reed says he better get ready for a hyperstorm. He could strike at any moment. Sue says that he needs a break. Actually, I think she's the one who needs a so-called break. I think her encounter with Namor got her all hot and bothered. But before they can get it on, there's an alarm, an emergency in the reception center. They run in, and they find that man in the trench coat. And instead of sitting down to read People or Time magazine like a polite guest, he collapsed on the floor. He turns around, and it's Gorgon of the Inhumans. He says the royal family has a great need of the Fantastic Four. Black Bolt has gone mad and plans to destroy them all. Well, that's kind of a surprise ending. I wasn't expecting a little detour back to the world of the Inhumans in these final days of the DeFalco-Ryan issues, but that's what we get. Coming next issue, Black Bolt Berserk. Well, I'll be the judge of that. So if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. Come be my friend on Friendster, check out my criminal past on arrestrecords.com, and join my WNBA Fantasy League. So long, kids. This podcast is over. Going over to Susan's house. Going over to Susan's house. I can't be alone tonight. Down by the donut prints, a 15-year-old boy lies on the sidewalk with a bullet in his forehead. In a final act of indignity, the paramedics take off all his clothes for the whole world to see while they put him in the back.